First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's Greg Frank and Howard Balzer.
And we are live from the Phoenix Convention Center. It is day three of our Radio Row coverage, getting you over the hump as we inch closer to the big game, Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday evening. And we're going to jump right in as we have our first guest on the show. Also want to shout out our in-studio engineer, John Bellmer, back in Houston, Texas. Ron Culver is our on-site engineer. Our guest coverage this week is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And without further ado, let's get to him now. He is the Hall of Fame wide receiver, Steve Largent of the Seattle Seahawks. Steve, good to see you. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, new to Radio Row, done it a lot? You know, where do you fit in around these parts?
I haven't done it a lot, but I've done it a little. It looks like it's bigger than ever. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that I'm curious about is, you know, I was born in the mid-90s, and, you know, I grew up with the Matt Hasselbeck, Sean Alexander, Lofa Tatupu Seahawks, and I remember, you know, it was called Quest Field. It was a great home field advantage. What was it like playing in Seattle when you were there?
It was equally great.
Yeah.
We played in the King Dome. But our fan base was always great. I always say they're more like a college fan base. So we kind of adopted a lot of the UW fans to the Seahawks, and they were great fans. They were always cheering the Seahawks, but they weren't booing the other team, and that was really the difference. They were great fans.
You know, when I think about that area, I think about, you know, you playing for the Seahawks, and then of course the Sonics had some really good teams in the 90s, and Ken Griffey Jr. and Edgar Martinez with the Mariners and Randy Johnson. It must have been a really fun time in Seattle sports.
Yeah, it really was, because there were a lot of great guys on the various teams, the basketball team, the baseball team. They really performed for the fans, and I think they all appreciated the fan base.
Yeah, so go ahead, Howard.
I want to get your sense, Steve, certainly as a Hall of Fame wide receiver, and in your day what the game was and now what it is.
Yeah.
And we see receivers with these astronomical numbers, and it's like, well, you're not getting in unless you have 1,000 receptions and 12,000 yards and all that. And as a selector, and many of us, we wrestle over times. Well, how do you, you know, some guys, okay, Jerry Rice, yeah, obvious.
Right.
But then the other guy, you wrestle over the separation. How do you see the game today? And I don't know if you empathize with how tough it is for we get the, you know, we have three wide receivers. We'll find out tomorrow night if any of them get in. But
yeah,
three wide receivers with Torrey Holt, Reggie Wayne, Andre Johnson, and it becomes tough to separate them. I'm curious of your perspective as a wide receiver about that.
Well, number one, I love the game today. I love the way they play the game today. I love the way they throw the ball today. And I would love to play in the passing game today. I think generally they throw more passes and they catch more passes for less yards.
Yes.
But they're still throwing and catching, and I love that. I think my career average was 14 yards per catch. I think today if they average 6 yards or 7 yards, 8 yards a catch, that's good. So there's just a difference there. I love the fact that they've made changes to the way defensive backs can cover, and I think it has allowed receivers to run a little more freely. They've made changes in the way they tackle, not using the helmet to hit a player. I think that's for the betterment of the game, and not worse. So I think they've made some changes to produce the type of football that they have today. And it's a little bit different game, but I love it still the same because they're still throwing the ball.
And what's interesting is you'll get a guy like, and everyone talks about Dak Prescott, he tied for the league lead with interceptions with 15. Back in the day, that wasn't a lot of interceptions.
No, it wasn't
in
a lot
season.
Of, no,
now it's
right.
Considered, oh man, that's not very good. And one historical point, just to what you were saying, this is the 50th anniversary of the introduction of the passer rating into pro football.
Huh.
And when they were setting up that formula, they used 50% completion percentage as the average. for that, how that number was computed within the passer rating. 50% is average.
Wow.
Right? Now the average, it's like 65% right. completion percentage yeah. in the league. Yeah. That's every team. It's pretty wild how all of that has evolved.
Yeah, it has evolved. But again, like I say, I love the game more today than ever before.
Steve, I want to ask you, kind of going off that, what would your response be to a lot of people that say, oh, it feels like it's impossible to play defense these days with some of the, you know, calls on corners. For we saw it in the AFC Championship game on, I think, Mike Hilton and Eli Apple for Cincinnati, where you get illegal contacts and pass interferences that look kind of tacky. As a wide receiver, you know, how do you feel about some of those gripes that people have?
Well, I don't really think they're justified. I think that, it is a different game. You still have to block and tackle. It's still about catching, punting, kicking. I don't think that there's a lot of legitimacy to their complaints about those rule changes and affecting the game in a negative way. I think it's been positive.
Howard mentioned a few of the wide receivers up in this year's class for the Hall of Fame. Earlier this week, we heard the official retirement of A.J. Green. I'm curious where you think he fits in terms of some of the receivers that have played the game the last 20 years.
I've watched AJ, and I really appreciate his game, and I think he's a tremendous receiver. But I don't know, you know, I don't know how they're going to judge receivers anymore.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I can't tell you.
It's interesting because I was just mentioning sometimes almost what the minimums have to be, and you look at, and he was great his first seven seasons, then had some injuries, and then played a long time, but didn't really compile numbers at the end of his career.
Yeah.
I think he only ended up with somewhere around 750, only 750 catches and 10,000 yards. And someone look at that and say, oh, well, that doesn't hold a candle. But
how many years did he play?
I think it was about 12, 13 years.
Drafted 2011, so yeah.
Yeah, and so that becomes part of it too. But when you just use the eye test and you judge him as how he played, and you look at other receivers, you say, well, he was every bit the receiver that Chris Carter was or Tim Brown or whatever, but they just compiled a whole lot more numbers. Sterling Sharp's a great example.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy who doesn't have great numbers because he was forced to retire after nine seasons because of an injury. So it becomes tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I'm glad I'm not a voter.
Steve, another thing I'm just curious your thoughts on in terms of the evolution of the position is what we've seen the last few years with the contracts that are getting shelled out to wide receivers, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams, A.J. Brown, Tyreek Hill, just to name a few, and now we're going to probably see a big one with Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. It's part of you say, hey, would have been nice to have been playing three, four decades later, right?
Well, you know, my first contract in the league was for 3 years. It was $28,000, $35,000, and $42,000. And you know what?
Was there a signing bonus in there?
Yeah, $20,000 signing bonus. Yeah. So, but the thing is there were players that had played in the league from 60s to the 70s that were saying, I can't believe Largent's getting that much money. So, you know,
yeah,
it's all relative, you know.
Right.
So the players now and players when I played,
right,
they can complain and gripe about that. But really, that's the way the game's evolved.
Quickly on the current version of the Seahawks, just what did you make of the divorce might be a harsh word, but just the ending of the relationship with Russell Wilson?
I was sad that it happened, but at the same time, I sort of defend the Seahawks for letting him go because Russell had gotten to the point where he had his own quarterback coach, he had his own workout coach, he wanted the authority to name who they were going to draft or pick a guy in the draft. And when you start doing that stuff, that's too much.
Yeah.
And I think
that's in the way of other people.
I think that's what
jobs.
The team said. They said, you know, we went with you so far, but that's too much, and we can't do that.
Yeah, Sean Payton said the other day in his press conference, he said, that stuff's not going to be happening here now.
That's what I heard.
Because he had a private – he also had, in all addition to the things you mentioned about the trainer and all those things, he had a private office in the facility.
in Denver?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but you talked about, you know, kind of it would be great to play today, and especially with great quarterbacks. So who was one of the things always argued about certain receivers that didn't have the good fortune of playing with a great quarterback. And they'll say, oh, well, he put up these numbers without a great quarterback. And I always say, well, if you're playing in the NFL, you might not be great, but you're still pretty good. You still got to get the ball to the receiver.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much the way you viewed it when you were playing? I don't know that you played any with great quarterbacks, but there were still good ones you played with.
Well, I played with really two quarterbacks my whole career, 14 years. One was Jim Zorn, one was Dave Craig.
Dave Craig, that's what I thought.
And so, yeah, and they were both good quarterbacks. And we had a great relationship, and we all worked really hard on the practice field to get routes right and throws right. I really, credit them for all the success that I had. I don't know.
Steve, lastly, what are you up to these days? I mean, you're still involved in living in Seattle, involved in the community up there?
No, I'm not. I actually live in Oklahoma. I was a representative in Congress in Washington, D.C. for 8 years, and then I ran the Trade Association for the wireless industry for 12 years, and then we moved back home to Tulsa, and I speak and do some appearances and stuff like this, but that's about all.
Real quick, as you're talking about the quarterbacks you played with.
Yeah.
As a receiver, what your perspective of, I think a lot of people don't realize just how hard that position is to play. In your perspective, what's the hardest part of it for a quarterback?
The thing is that you got to have great vision, and that's why so many quarterbacks are taller now, the ones that are very successful. But you got to have such great vision on the field and the ability to read defenses quickly. And if you can't do either of those, if you're not big or you're not able to read defenses quickly, you're not going to play in the NFL.
Steve, we got to let you go. Thanks for joining us and enjoy the rest of the week here on Radio Row. There's Steve Largent. Our guest coverage brought to you by Progressive. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. We're back on the other side. Phoenix Convention Center, Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's Greg Frank and Howard Balzer.
We are live from the Phoenix Convention Center. It is day three of our Radio Row coverage. Philadelphia Eagles, Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday evening. We roll on Thomas Dimitrov, the former general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, and Eric Eager, kind enough to join us from Sumer Sports. Guys, it's good to see you. How you doing?
We're great. A lot of energy around here, Media Row.
Yeah, so, especially Wednesday. First 2 days are a little slow.
Yeah, they're
then
slow.
Wednesday.
Is this your first rodeo?
No, hell no.
Okay, I figured it
wasn't.
No,
man, come on. They used to, because Atlanta, we were always trying to get our brand up. They would be bringing me here, and I'm like, I really don't want to be toted around Media Row, and I'd be doing this after this after this. So, no, it's been a lot of times.
Okay, Eric, how about you? How many times?
Yeah, this is my third.
Okay.
Obviously, second that the Chiefs have been involved in, which shows how much of a dynasty they're trying to build there. But, yeah, this is right. It's been great. Really, back when I was at PFF, we did a lot of radio stuff here, and now that we're with Sumer, we're trying to build our brand up a little bit.
Yeah, so tell us about the foundation of Sumer and how you guys linked up and how it all got started.
So I'll start and then I'll toss it over to Eric because he's got a really interesting perspective, of course. This was about a year ago, and we are partnered with our founder and our owner is Paul Tudor Jones, world-famous macro trader. And he was a guy that's been around the league in the ownership ways in certain ways. He almost bought the Dolphins. He almost – it was in the purchase situation for the Panthers. He was looking to put together a group. It was a roster optimization tool that he was trying to put together with his son. He and his son founded this company. They brought me on as the CEO and domain expert to be able to talk from a GM perspective. And basically what it is it's a cutting-edge algorithmic tool that allows GMs, those are our target, GMs to utilize data out there along with their abilities to pick the best rosters they can totally pick. And we'll throw it over to Eric on it.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, most of football analytics at this point has kind of tried to mimic what baseball does, which is like individual player eval, kind of independent, or trying to strip out the independence in the game. But obviously baseball is just like a bunch of one-on-one matchups. And it works in football. Sometimes you go
bigger sampling in baseball, too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You have left tackle, right defensive end, and a pass pro. That is a one-on-one matchup for the most part. There's some context to it. But, you know, when it comes to team building, it's like you can build a wins above replacement for a player. You can look at, like, what their value is on the field. But everything with respect to the salary cap is going to be make it harder, right? So, you know, I was saying earlier, like, I don't really necessarily care how good Kyler Murray is. I care how good he is relative to his cost, right? And then and can I squeeze out more surplus value? If I can't, then I shouldn't necessarily have him, even though I think he's a much better quarterback maybe than even Jalen. Like, I think he's probably a better quarterback than Jalen Hurts, but Jalen Hurts is making less than $5 million a year. So Jalen Hurts is so much better of a value to have on your roster. And then when you have Jalen Hurts, you can trade a first-round pick for A.J. Brown. You can go and get a James Bradbury and a Haason Reddick. Like, all those things are interconnected. And so far in football analytics, all we've really done is that first part, saying how good a player is. What is he worth? What we're trying to do at Sumer is sort of put that all into one thing, 1 through 53, the salary cap at 224.5, and try to, you know, give you the best optimization through like a million possibilities there. Faster and more efficient than maybe one person could do with their own brain.
It's interesting you mentioned Kyler Murray. I don't want to get bared down on him.
Yeah, how much time we
got
here?
But here, I'm here at the Super Bowl, but I am here from Arizona and I cover the Cardinals. And you mentioned about Jalen Hurts and he got the new contract. How much do you factor injuries into the whole thing? Because the thing I point out with Kyler Murray, with all the controversy around him, is he's now played four seasons and had seven injuries,
right?
Five to his legs.
Well, look,
I'm curious, in your mind, how do you look at quarterbacks? Is that sustainable over time?
I'm going to toss it over him again. From my perspective, injuries are huge. Matt Ryan, you look back at Matt Ryan in Atlanta, right? 1.5 games for 14 years he missed.
Yep.
That's obviously what you're looking for. When you start getting a quarterback that has a track record, for us as team builders, it is a hair-pulling-out situation because every time you turn around, then you're going to need that backup quarterback. And what backup quarterback is going to come in? This comes to the decision about how much you're going to start paying those backup quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Right after what happened in San Francisco, I think there's going to be an uptick in that, a significant uptick.
Well, I think this is why analytics are so important, right? Because there's clearly a buy price on all these players, right? If Kyler Murray, if somebody came and said, look, Kyler Murray's worth $10 million, I'm buying every single day, right? Because if I get 12 games out of Kyler Murray for $10 million, that's worth it, right? But if somebody's saying $46 million APY, I'm going to be a little bit hesitant, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think the hard part is like, obviously, we have really smart football minds in every single building. You know, guys like Thomas who have not only evaluated players but built teams. We've for too long, I think, had hard and fast rules. Kyler Murray's injury prone. We're not going to touch him.
Yeah.
N'Kobe Dean, right? N'Kobe Dean out of Georgia.
Yeah, very good to the third round.
Very good linebacker for Georgia, right? And a lot of teams just said, we're not going to draft him, right?
Yeah.
And the Eagles said, well, we're not going to draft him in rounds 1 and 2, but we'll draft him in round 3 because there's very clearly upside there.
Yes.
And I think, you know, and the Eagles, one of the better, you know, analytically driven teams in the league. That's why you have to have, like, you know, you have to factor injuries in as opposed to just like one label that a player gets. Same thing with character issues, right? Like if you can get, you know, you think about a player who's kind of had a past. Like if you say, okay, if I can bring him into Kansas City or bring him into Philadelphia, and if there is a 50% chance he's fine, and when he's that player, he's an 8 out of 9. Okay, well then that might be worth the price. And again, that's why it's important to do the math.
And if I may quickly, when you're talking about that, and you wonder that, like how does an analytic tool and a algorithmic based tool, how do you deal with that, right? And we have overrides and we have assumptions. Assumptions are what Eric just had mentioned. You can work them into our tool and into our mechanism that would say, okay, we are not going to draft this player, and this player until the third, fourth, and fifth round because of injury, because of character, right? Because the most complicated thing for a lot of these NFL people is, again, criminally underutilized data out there at their disposal. That sounds melodramatic, but it is. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I didn't have the time to put into it as a general manager, and I look at it now and I'm thinking, if we could be that much more effective as general managers if we truly didn't just expect our data people, hand me a sheet of paper, I'm on the treadmill, I'm sweating all over, I'm like, yeah, okay, gotcha, thank you.
Yeah.
We want this product to ultimately be in front of that GM, sits down in the morning with his cup of coffee or whatever when he throws his dip in, right, the old school football people, and we want that to be his go-to at the beginning of the day. That's my goal from where I am. But we can't ramrod it
right.
to the football people.
Right.
We have to help them in their evolution of acceptance.
You know,
I've always railed to a degree at the instability, and with GM, not just GMs so much, but with coaching staffs. And let's be real. You mentioned Matt Ryan. When Kyle Shanahan left after the Super Bowl, it wasn't the same.
Yeah,
it wasn't the same. And when you all these guys moving around, especially offensive coordinators, when they a defensive coach like Dan Quinn has an offensive coordinator, and then he leaves for another job because it worked, and all of a sudden, now, I mean, how much is that? How do you build that into the system in terms of building a roster because of the coaching staffs has changed so radically on a yearly basis?
Well, this is one of the jobs that we did at PFF for the Falcons, which was like, you know, you guys ran a zone-heavy scheme, right? And you know, there were going to be – you couldn't afford necessarily the Joe Tooney-type guards or something like
sure.
that. And it's like, well, okay, if you have only this much money to spend on a guard, well, like, let's find a guard who's really good at the things that Atlanta does – and then, you know, maybe he doesn't have to be great. Like, the whole league thinks he's a 4, and he's a 6 at the stuff you guys do, right? And to your point about stability, it's like, well, that assumes that you're going to run that same offense for the foreseeable future. And
yeah.
that's, you know, when you build the weak links of a team, when you're like, okay, you have the pillars of defensive end, left tackle, wide receiver, quarterback, you know, and then the weaker links, the guards and the corners and stuff, and you go from a man-heavy scheme to a zone-heavy scheme, it's like, well, that job description for that player just changed, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be a really hard, you know, that's something that you always have to factor in, and something that why we have time horizons in our data, just because we know that schemes sort of dissipate over time.
Before we let you guys go, we've talked about quarterbacks and injuries. I'm fascinated into what both of you think about how we got to where we are with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens and where we're going there.
Well, you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, not having an agent is really tough. You know, I think that, like, there's always this idea of, you know, management versus player, and, you know, is the team trying to screw me? And you look at the Ravens, you know, they let C.J. Mosley go. They let Matthew Judon go.
They got a deal done with Roquan Smith, though, who doesn't have
representation. That's what I'm saying. Like, before then, it was Hollywood Brown. It was Matthew Judon. It was Yannick Ngakoue. They let a bunch of players who were kind of, like, top-ish of the market go. And so I think, like, prior to this season, Lamar's like, look, this team's only going to buy me back at a team-friendly thing. And an agent could say, like, look, there's daylight between the team-friendly deal and what's good for you. And without an agent, it's really hard to get there. And then now I think you're in an even tougher spot, to your point, because they did give a market-level deal to another position, a guy who had only played half a season for the team
right.
versus a guy who was drafted and played there for 4 years.
Look, the idea of signing Roquan, I love it, by the way, and I'm a big fan of Eric DaCosta and what he does. However, I mean, as you can imagine, sending unbelievable messages there, right? I would not want to deal with a player that doesn't have an agent. That's a complicated, enervating process for a general manager. But then you step back and you look that team goes and pays that much money for a linebacker and you're still up. To me, it sends massive messages.
There he is, Eric Eager and Thomas Dimitrov from Sumer Sports. Thank you both for your time. Fascinating conversation. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back on the other side as we have an open segment, I think, coming up next. Phoenix Convention Center, Radio Row, Sports Map Radio.
Listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's Greg Frank and Howard Balzer.
All right, we're back. Our coverage this week is brought to you by Rufus Teague. The big game calls for the best snacks. Now you can get the award-winning barbecue flavors that made Rufus Teague famous in their new line of barbecue nuts, crunching corns, and sunflower seeds, or as they call them, spitting seeds. Get yours at RufusTeague.com. Of course, our buddies at Rufus Teague proud to have Kansas City's most award-winning barbecue sauce, and quite a good time to be a barbecue company based out of Kansas City. So they are from the KC area, and of course the big game features the Chiefs and the Eagles on Sunday night here in Arizona. Howard, really fascinating conversation there with Eric Eager.
We
and
can
and
go
Thomas
on for
Dimitrov.
A long time
yeah,
with
I mean,
that
just
stuff.
In terms of player evaluation and, you know, trends in the league and, you know, fitting it all in the salary cap, like you said, there's so many layers you can peel
right.
back there because there's so many players on an NFL roster. It's so many interesting case studies as to who gets what in terms of contracts.
And the real intriguing part of it, which I don't think is noticed a lot of times by fans and sometimes even media to a degree, is how things change when those coaches change. and I was immediately thinking as they were talking about it after I, you know, brought up about coaching changes and all that. Here's a guy in the Super Bowl for the Eagles, Hassan Reddick.
Yeah,
right. Is a pass rusher in college?
Yes,
a pure pass rusher. Right. The Cardinals draft
I know where you're
him.
Going with this.
The Cardinals draft him.
Inside linebacker.
Yeah, and they drafted him in 2017 to a team who was playing a 3-4 defense.
Yep.
Right? But yet, they're putting him on the inside because they had outside linebackers. Right? So they're, his athletic ability to put on the inside. And he was just a guy on the inside. Then, in 2018, Steve Wilkes comes in, and he switches to a 4-3.
Right.
Right? And now,
they played him down D-line, D-end, right?
Well, he was still there, still putting him in the inside, and they didn't know what to do with him. And he was only in his second year. And now he's getting accustomed to his second defense, right?
Yeah.
And Steve Wilkes gets fired after one season.
Yeah.
And now Cliff Kingsbury comes in with Vance Joseph, goes back to the 3-4.
Right.
Well, he doesn't know Hassan Reddick, and so they're full. Oh, we'll try him here. We'll try him there. And then finally, in 2020, they put him on the edge consistently.
Off. Right.
And all of a sudden, he
then he leaves and goes to Carolina.
Right. And granted, a part of what he was able to do is because Chandler Jones got hurt.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he steps in and starts.
And Watt wasn't there yet, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And Watt's down. He's a down lineman in the 3-4.
Yeah.
Or in a 4-3. And so. There you go. And so, like you said, he leaves and goes to Carolina on a one-year deal.
One-year deal.
Because everybody in the league is looking at him, okay, great season, but was that a fluke?
Right.
Right? And they don't really know much about him. And does well in Carolina. And Eagles signed him to a nice contract. Didn't break the bank on him.
Right.
Three-year deal. And now he's...
They're loving that. I mean, I follow the Philly media very closely. People are saying it's one of maybe the best free agent signing in Eagles history. And, when you look at... He was a defensive player of the year candidate and a part of a defense that had four D linemen that had double digit sacks, which is the first time in the Super Bowl era. So that'll certainly be a fascinating thing to watch in this game is the Eagles pass rush against the Kansas City offensive line.
But that whole issue of fitting players and then when defensive schemes change, who was it we were talking with Alex Singleton yesterday?
Four DCs in 4 years.
Yeah. So how do you get?
How do you get? Any
how do you ever get comfortable with it?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's a real feeling, and we talked about it a little bit. There's a real feeling in Arizona, and people aren't thrilled with it, but it might make sense. Is that they're going to hire Mike Kafka as the head coach and keep Vance Joseph?
He's the leader in the clubhouse, huh?
That's what the feeling is, and I've been told that Michael Bidwell likes him a lot, and I think that offensive-oriented coach can be a good way to go because if you hire Lou Anarumo, who's going to be the offensive coordinator that has to put the pieces together with this team. And so now you have the guy who's running the offense, but you keep some continuity on defense with the same system now that they've had for 4 years.
Yeah.
And that's a plus. They need better players in a bunch of places. But people blame it drives me nuts, Greg, when people say, "Oh, how good a coordinator he!" Aaron Glenn was mentioned as head coach. Well, how could he be defensive candidate? His team gave up all these points and gave up all these yards. Well, you have to have the talent.
Yeah,
you have to have the talent, and so they need a bunch, especially with J.J. Watt retiring, and they need pass rushers, they need corners.
Sure,
you need talent, and what I think people forget a lot, Greg, is how the offense, defense, and special teams, for that matter, it all integrates with itself. It all plays off each other.
Well,
if you have an offense that isn't doing much, and then your defense is out there, and you're playing behind, and the other team's ahead, and that affects what you do. And if you're on the field more because your offense isn't very productive, then... That's a problem with the defense.
I'm glad you bring this up because I think that in the AFC Championship game, one of the things that maybe gets lost because you had the late hit, which set up the field goal for Kansas City to win the game. But when the possession started for Kansas City, Cincinnati punched the ball down the middle of the field, and they allow Sky Moore to get a 30-yard return.
Exactly.
And they're already in midfield.
Right.
Then you throw in the penalty yardage. Mahomes barely needed to do anything to get him in field goal range. And again, I think that special teams aspect of it maybe gets underlooked because of the fact that Oh,
totally.
The penalty was the last thing we saw.
Bingo.
Right, and that's what set it up.
Absolutely 100% agree. I said that to many people since that game about the punt return, like you said, and then even, you know, allowing, and maybe they weren't worried about Mahomes running that much because of his ankle, and so they are maybe a little surprised that he even ran on that play. And even though the play only gained 5 yards, he still ran for about, what, 10 to 12 because of where he was behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And they let him get away. You know, they let him gain those yards and even be in position to where the push came, out of bounds for the penalty. So those are the little things. Hey, we were talking about it yesterday, the little things that happen in games that are forgotten about a lot of times. And those are the things that lead to the obviously victory for one team and a loss for another.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday as well with some of the things in Super Bowls that can happen on special teams with the Sean Payton onside kick with the New Orleans one. What, did Devin Hester run an opening kickoff back, I think, in the Indianapolis Super Bowl?
No, that was the Bears. Yeah, that was the Bears-Colts game. Yeah,
of course,
opening
Colts
kickoff
ended up winning that game anyway. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the aspect of the game that is by far the most underlooked because of the fact that those guys aren't on the field as much. And,
right.
You know, they're specialists. But, that was something that I noticed, you know, late in the game, inside a minute left, put the ball out of bounds as far as you can and pin him further back. And you know, Cincinnati kind of gift-wrapped it a little bit there for Kansas City. And Keith still had to take advantage. Bucker still had to make a long kick. But, I think that all that is part of the game kind of each phase kind of working in concert with the other one.
No question. And those things happen in all games. It's not just the big ones that we're watching in the postseason. They happen in all games, but a lot of times they're kind of forgotten. And the team that won, the mistakes that team make are kind of forgotten.
Right.
But the team that lost, boy, every little thing is magnified tremendously. But then, like you said, when you have a game-changing play like that, 15-yard penalty, that even allows them to even try a field goal. I guess they could have tried one at 61 yards, but obviously the odds were
more comfortable at 46.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, that's the beauty of this game, but I think sometimes that beauty is not seen, or if not the beauty, those intricacies and those plays here and there that change everything. But you know what happens after the game? The team that loses, it's the play call. Oh, that was a bad play call. Like, anyone even knows what the play call was. They don't know if the quarterback changed it.
Right.
You know, they don't know
if he improvised during the play.
Right, and just because the play didn't work, bad play call. Well, no, it comes down to execution. And you know what? I'm going to really have a revelation here, Greg. You know, sometimes the other team was just better on that play.
Right.
And because that's the way fans look at it, though. You know, a lot of times they look at it. If your guy makes a great play, they don't talk about or they don't talk about the other guy who made a mistake. No, your guy made a great play.
Right.
Or when someone says, we got out-coached, right? Well, that's an insult to the other team.
Right.
Oh, what? You got out-coached? No, you got out-played
and
out-executed. And I'll always remember, always like to throw it in there every now and then, the classic line from John McKay, the first head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that Greg lost their first 26 games of their existence.
Wow.
It was a 14-game season. They were 0-14 and then 0-12 before they won a game. And after one of those 26 games, John McKay was asked famously by a reporter, what's your opinion? What do you think about your team's execution? And he said, I'm in favor of it. One of the great one-liners in history. And by the way, remember that controversial stuff that Brian Kelly said after the Notre Dame game a couple seasons ago? He was trying to mimic what John McKay said. First of all, botched the delivery, and three-quarters of the people didn't even know what he was referring to, and it just came off bad. But bottom line is that's what games come down to, is player execution.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Andrew Sendejo, the safety, is up next.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from Radio Row in Arizona, ahead of the big game, here's Greg Frank and Howard Balzer.
All righty, we are back here. Supposed to be getting Andrew Sendejo, the former safety He's in his mid-30s now. I don't know that he's officially retired. I'm looking at his career stuff now. So he did not play in the 2022 season, but working on getting him over here. Howard, before we...
Oh, we have him right here. Okay, great. Yeah,
you can hop on right here and get started as a guy that has some familiarity with Jonathan Gannon, the Eagles defensive coordinator. They work together in Minnesota, and he's kind enough to join us right now, the former Rice Owl, and made his name really with the Minnesota Vikings. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, doing well. So let's start there. Obviously, Jonathan Gannon, a guy you know well, is a position coach in Minnesota. Then he gets the Colts DC job. He's really taken off as the Eagles defensive coordinator as well, coming over with – or he's a secondary coach in Indianapolis, and now the DC with the Eagles. Just your thoughts on the relationship that you guys have and somebody who seems to be a future head coach.
Yeah, so had 4 years with Gannon. It's been great to see him kind of, you know, work his way up all the way to coordinator, now calling a game in the Super Bowl. Excited for him, happy for him, hoping they get a win, hoping the defense obviously plays well and he can, you know, hold up the Lombardi Trophy.
You know, and you guys were a part of some really good teams there in Minnesota, and you did run into the Eagles in the NFC Championship in the 2017 season, but you played a lot of good defenders, you know, Xavier Rhodes in that secondary, and, of course, now we're seeing Harrison Smith in the last few years really take off, Everson Griffin, pass rusher, Danielle Hunter. Just what do you remember most of your time with the Purple People Eaters?
Man, a lot of good times there. I was there for, you know, like 9 years or something like that. It was a long time, but... had some really good seasons, made a lot of good friends, a lot of good memories, learned a lot of good defense. So I had a great time in Minnesota.
So, Andrew, what is it like when you have a pretty long career, follows playing in college, whatever age you started playing as a youngster, I would guess 6 years, 7 years old, whatever it might have been. And what's it like when that time comes and you're not getting the phone call anymore and you're wondering, okay, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? What is that like for you, and what is it like for players?
I think it can be hard for guys at times if they, you know, if they expected to play longer, you know, maybe they're, you know, they feel like they should be getting picked up or getting phone calls. And I think you just have to be realistic with yourself. You got to be realistic with, you know, how you've been playing. And, you know, I think you have to also just know that there's life outside of football, and you know, kind of in the back of your mind, think about what other passions you have outside of out of football. So that way, whenever it is over, you kind of have a nice transition into, you know, your next life, so to speak.
And you're obviously here promoting a very important cause with football, Braintree Nutrition, to help enhance and preserve brain health. Why get involved here? Obviously, a very important thing for football players, right?
Yeah, so we started Braintree. It was me and actually two other Rice football players that I played with. One also played in the NFL for a while. And in consultation with neurologists, we formulated a line of products to help enhance and preserve and protect the brain. Because right now there's, you know, a lot of teams don't have really good rehab protocols for coming back from concussions. A lot of times it's just, you know, go sit in a dark room, no screens, no, you know, no loud music, whatever. And there's a lot of other things you can do to help your brain to recover from that, right? So that's why our first product is our basically our memory, focus, and brain anti-inflammatory product. And also that helps because a lot of guys like myself were diagnosed by several doctors with some type of ADD or ADHD, right? But the NFL has really strict rules on prescribing you medication for those because they're performance enhancing drugs. So I was actually diagnosed by the team doctor. They said, if you were a guy off the street, I could give you medication for this, but per the NFL, you just don't have a long enough history, and so it makes the league look bad, right, if they're starting to just hand out, you know, prescriptions for that. So that's why I also started it, to help guys with memory and focus, because we have to study a lot of film. You have to have instant memory recall on the field. And then obviously along with the brain anti-inflammatory properties that it has. So it goes along with three other products as well, our Ultra Strength Probiotic, because of the numerous studies about gut health being linked to degenerative brain disease.
Yeah.
Then we also have our stress and anxiety relief product that goes along with that. And then our sleep aid, because sleep is the foundation of just – overall health, mental health, brain health. And so they all work synergistically together to have your brain firing on all cylinders gives your brain the best chance to operate at a high level.
You mentioned the protocols with the league this year, and kind of how they're not always the cleanest and not always, you know, and that came under fire this year with Tua Tagovailoa and the injuries and the concussions that he went through. Just what did you make of kind of what Tua went through and the revisions that the league was seemingly making with the players' union to the protocols?
Right. I think, you know, really a lot of time the league just does what they have to so there's not public backlash. Like, they're just trying to always, like, cover their ass to make it look like they – you know,
really
they care. Yeah. Just wait until you're done playing and you'll see how much the league actually like cares about you. So, yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, you just have to be realistic with yourself about, you know, or do you still feel like you're concussed? Are you ready to get hit again? And that was kind of always my mark of if I was ready to play again after a concussion is like, are you ready to go tackle this running back right in the face if you have to? And if you're not mentally ready, then you're not ready to play.
Yeah.
So, and you know, when you're kind of concussed or you still are not all the way there, you mentally are not ready to have to hit somebody. And so you just have to be, like I said, you got to be realistic with yourself. And you're actually, you know, a lot of guys, they feel the pressure to come back early, you know, to help the team. But you actually could end up hurting the team because if you come back too early and get another concussion, now you're out for, you could be out for a month. You could be out for the rest of the season. You could be out for the rest of your career. So you just got to be smart about it.
I want to follow up on that, but I want to come back to something you said earlier about having a history of ADHD or ADD. Because I was always under the impression, well, if you have it, you can get a prescription, and as long as they know about it, it's okay. But you're saying it has to be for a certain number of years. I didn't realize that.
So
do you know how long that is?
I don't know. But basically what the NFL does is each team has one doctor that you go to see that can diagnose you and prescribe you. That way, if they say no, you can't just keep going around to other doctors, right? So then that what you get is a TUE, is called a therapeutic use exemption. So you go and you meet, you do like 2 days of basically like interviews, and then they say like, okay, yeah, we can prescribe you, and then we submit this form to the league. So that way, when you get a drug test and an amphetamine shows up, that you're okay, right? Because you've been prescribed and everything. But basically, if you don't have a long enough history, then it just looks bad that they're just handing it out because
they might be claiming, oh, he has this now, as opposed to like if you were diagnosed as a kid or young.
Right. Which and the thing is, most kids are misdiagnosed with having these because they're kids and they're underslept, and so they're running around and they're going crazy. Well, that's what kids do, right? So so there's also people who probably don't actually even have those disorders but were diagnosed as a kid with it, and they're out there taking these things. So we're also trying to just get people off of these prescription medications like an Adderall, like a Xanax for stress and anxiety, like Ambien for sleep. So that's why we have just these naturally occurring ingredients in our products that are all backed by clinical studies on humans, proven effective at the dosages that we put them in. And that's another thing, a lot of companies, they just want really good margins, so they don't put enough in there that's correct. Like, we base this just on wanting to help. We donate a portion of our proceeds for every bottle sold to Alzheimer's research, and we made it for ourselves to take, for our teammates to take, to have a product that was safe and effective, no banned substances, and really so that everybody could take it.
The other thing you said when you were talking about, you know, then am I really in a position to be able to tackle someone? Or I've covered the league long enough, Andrew, I can remember where concussions were joked about, and you talk to a guy after, like, say a day or two after the game, and you talk about where he just doesn't even remember stuff that happened, and he'd be laughing.
Yeah.
So I think there was a certain degree that no one really understood how potentially dangerous over time
right
that can be. Do you think that self-awareness is a lot more now than it used to be?
Yes, and I think too, just bringing attention to some of the older players that have dealt with some of the CTE and seeing how serious it is.
Yeah.
I think that kind of opens up guys' eyes as to
the Will Smith movie probably helped a little bit.
Yeah. That, I don't know. That movie was a little dramatic for me, but
all right.
But I think it's definitely taken a lot more serious now than it was, and it's really, you really have to get the young guys to take it, because the young guys, and I know when I was young, you're just trying to stay on the team. You want to be
a job.
You
want
to be available, you know, and so you push through some things. And even in my younger years, if you got kind of like dinged up or knocked out, like as long as you could go to the, we didn't have the blue tent, but as long as you go to the sideline and pass a couple of those questions or whatever, you could go right back in the game.
Back in.
You know, now, as soon as you kind of look any type of like you got kind of dinged or you're kind of hazy, then, you know, you go to the blue tent, you're probably not coming back in the game.
There he is, Andrew Sendejo, the former NFL safety out of Rice. Most of his time with the Minnesota Vikings. Braintree Nutrition is the company. Thanks a lot for your time. Enjoy the rest of the week on Radio Row.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. 1 hour down, 1 hour to play here on Sports Map Radio from the Phoenix Convention Center. It's Radio Row. We're back after this.
Here's a message just for the attorneys out there.